Call our work session to order, and item on the agenda.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
The order that it's listed on our agenda is the order that you want to proceed through.
Yeah, formal public comment, then six would be the vote. Okay. So there's no changes. And then
the work session, that you have anything that you want to put, like, you want to put it now?
Sure. Yep. Okay. Yeah. So today's meeting is held to discuss the class size waiver. That's okay. I provided the board a packet today that it gives you the data of where we are as a school district. We need a waiver for a total of six classes out of 83 K to three classes in the school district. Just to give you a reference, last year we had 12 classes of 79 classes K to three district wide. So I did take the union's desire for smaller class size into consideration during the hiring season. And I realized that not all classes are under that 22 threshold, but we are closer than we were last year, very close, six out of 83. The numbers of classes are spread out over three schools. One of our schools did meet the waiver in all of the K to three classrooms. So there are actually two waivers that are considered during the month of November for school districts. One is for 98% staffing. So 98% of the staff that are earned in a school must be placed in that school. We have never in my tenure asked for that waiver, and I don't think that we have ever asked for that waiver. In fact, including our Title I units, we're significantly over 98% of staffing in all of our elementary schools. So North is over 8.19 units, and a unit is a teacher. CES is over 5.12 units, and again, unit is a teacher or two paras. Smyrna Elementary is over 5.34 units, and Sunnyside is over 5.48 units. So significantly more. We are not asking for that waiver. Obviously, we did not post that and ask for that, but I just wanted you to note that. I don't foresee us ever doing that. It's the work that Chris and my office and Chris's office do all summer to make sure that we staff as best as we can, adequately as we can. I will tell you, having traveled to Utah a few years ago to visit the immersion programs at all of the schools out there, which was a pretty cool place to be, I must say. One of the things that was stated was you should overpopulate your classes of immersion because it will tend to have attrition over the years. And I looked at our guide who works for the Department of Education, and I said, what about the class size waiver? And that was not a concern. So we are now in the year of sixth grade at JBM, and we have seen how that attrition affects the class sizes at JBM. So we have 16 and 17 students in the immersion class. So if we don't over enroll in those classes at the early level, with the teacher understanding that that is the possibility, that is the practice, I should say, and then volunteering to be a teacher in a classroom over 22, we still end up with attrition that would then overpopulate or ask teachers who are non-immersion to take on more students because they're not in the immersion program. So that's something that we have had to watch happen to see where it would go. We are well aware of it now. I'm going to work with JBM to see if we can be creative so that that doesn't happen or affect the different teachers. But we didn't know until we knew, and now we know better. So we're going to try to do better. So that's one thing to consider when you're considering the waiver this evening. There are things that can be done, and I think, you know, the waiver is one of those things that will maybe not affect your classroom as much as it will maybe your peers and other people or the other teachers in the school. So we could make our fourth grades 30. And if you can note in the data that I gave you, our fourth grades are not at 30. Our fourth grades have been through the pandemic, just like our K through threes have. So we did not staff our fourth grade at 30. We have staffed them at an appropriate level. We could separate TAM teachers. That's not what our special education students need. And I'm not suggesting that we put 44 students in a TAM class, because there's no point in having a TAM class, nor would you have the room for that, nor would it be appropriate for the special needs of the students. So we wouldn't do that. Those are the things that I see specific to this year that may, you know, result in a smaller class size in some settings, but not at all. So those are the things that we weigh at district office. And I want to thank the principals that have come today and assistant principals, because it is something that we discuss often, all the time. So it is not something that is done lightly. We don't ask for this because it's just convenient for us. It is something that we wrestle with. We have children of our own who have gone through schools, and we're not asking anyone to do anything that we wouldn't have done ourselves. So what will happen if the waiver passes? Nothing. The classes will stay the same. And I did speak to a few board members over the past few weeks, and because this is such a concern of our community and of our staff, I think that we look in 3 months, where are our classes? So where are we now? Where are we in 3 months? Where are we in another 3 months? And that way we can do a better job of forecasting where the class size goes from the beginning of this year to the end of the year. And that would be something that Chris and I could use when we do the projections of how many teachers to staff in a grade level. Because currently there are just a few extra kids, but they're not all in the same grade, and they're not all in the same school, and they're not in a grouping that we can say hire a teacher for that grouping. So they're scattered. So I am very interested in seeing the trend, and I think some of you are as well, where we end up at the end of the year. So because of that, I am asking that you vote yes for the waiver. Of course, willing to hear everything that we need to hear to make the best decision for our school district.
Just two things. Mm-hmm. One thing that concerns me is what is the impetus of the waiver? You say approval waiver, okay, 23, hey, one person extra, one wasn't an extra in a class, no big deal. But what happens when you say approve the waiver, now we're, hey, 26, it's only 4 over, oh, 27, you know, it's still open-ended. So that's one concern of mine.
Sure.
And the second one is, if we were to put a pair in those 6 classrooms, mm-hmm. Then you have 2 adults for those 23, 24 students.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that it's costly to the objection to that solution?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Chris. No, so para units are not behavioral interventionist para units, the para that we have provided out of opportunity funds, and library paras are the only 3 paras that are not associated with special education students. So that funding would then would come out of local. We're not being funded by those units are not being funded by special education complex and intense units. And those other para units that I discussed are all fit into the unit count for these schools to function. Now, I don't have any plans, and my principals can speak up as well, don't have any plans on overloading any classes to 26 or 27. Is there a possibility that we have to hire another teacher along the way? Sure, but that would be out of local, and that would be something that when it's needed, we would do. But at this time, it's not needed. So I know that, you know, Chris is extremely fiscally sound, and if she felt there was any room for us to wiggle around and get 6 paras in classes, then it would be done. But we do have a $1.2 million give back to the state that requires us to use our largest funding category, which is human resources. And that is where a lot of our give back comes from. Otherwise, it comes out of operating lines, which means we may not pay our electric bills. I mean, I'm being facetious, but yes, that is the case.
It also works the opposite way. So if you have someone that has 22
or 21 in the school. They're not getting that, you know, you have
students that come and go, and so your anticipation is that you're
going to
lose some students, and
you need some
students
to come
and watch.
We've always been a district that's gained, correct?
We have gained, and that's the point of monitoring this through the years and reporting back to the board. So that the waiver passes, it's not a blanket pass and now we can just overpopulate classes. It's a pass, let's revisit this, you know, in 2 to 3 months time, see where our class sizes are then, and then discuss. And then again, you know, in another 2 to 3 months. And then if we do that continuously over the years, then we'll have a bit of data that we can look at and see where is the growth through the year, what months are we seeing growth through the year, what grade levels, that kind of thing, because we can predict, but even in kindergartens this year at Sunnyside, my first year at Sunnyside, I had 125 kindergartners. We had less than 80 this year. So we have some data, but we don't have it all. We don't have enough since COVID because things have just gone askew, you know, awry essentially. But yeah, that would be the point of continuing to monitor it so that the discussion continues. It's not just a blanket, here it is, and we're going to move on and everybody's happy or not happy. But watching those numbers, we do import, but the growth we're seeing is not necessarily in the elementaries, it's in the middle and high school. Those numbers have grown astronomically over the past couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, we're a net importer of choice students and our enrollment goes up, but it doesn't mean that we don't lose students throughout the year. And we're a net importer of choice, and we're positive growth, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to not lose students.
Well, this would answer the question. At the end of last year, how many kids did we, if through K through third, how many kids did we gain from when we put a waiver in effect to the end of that year?
What was our April 1st number?
Well, our
unit number.
Unit count for last year, mm-hmm. I'm going to say, off the top of my head, I think it was about 72 or 92 students So out of 6,000 students across the district, that's what our net growth was during the year.
And that's pre-K to 12.
Do you have any, do we have any idea how we're going to
K through third? I'm not sure if DOE published that. I can take a look at the grade level. I think it was just at the district level. But we can take a look at.
We discussed that this morning.
And the April information that we put together also is at the district level for enrollment projections and the growth there. It's not necessarily at the school or the grade level. But if I could add something else to Deb's comment earlier, the additional support that is provided to the schools through Title I, she gave you the numbers of how many units is up within above their 98%. What she mentioned, but is not included in that number, are the additional pairs funded through Opportunity Fund this year. Mm-hmm. So that's a new funding category for this year, and they're not even into that calculation yet.
Yeah, but I'd like the numbers that are above 100%, not 98%.
They're all above 100%.
Right, I get they're above 100, but we're given, we have the numbers of what's above 98.
Madam President, can I make a recommendation that we hold the rest of this discussion until we have an open motion on the floor and allow people who've come to give public comment the chance, so if they have other things they need to get to, they can.
Yeah, I mean, we can.
I didn't make a motion. I just made a recommendation. Just a comment.
Okay. I mean, what this is.
There's a lot of trouble to be able to have some discussion. Now, for public comment, so that they understand, that we understand what's going on. In the
that's
process. Right. I don't want to. Come in cold and say, oh, this part of cold comments. I just want to have a little discussion and more about it.
I mean, when you look at the, at least from what I saw in the numbers at at Smyrna Elementary, right, first grade, if we move the extra students to the room that has the care of, we don't need a waiver for that school.
Right, but that classroom also. Hold on a second. No. That classroom, we talked about this, and it is not the right thing to do for those kids or that teacher, because there's a core class of students who are working their way into the regular curriculum, and they come in every day with their teacher and support, and they work in that classroom. So I had asked Cindy about that today, and I said, well, what does this look like? And she said, no, that's because Christine McGinnis is the classroom, and Miss Vitale is the teacher of the core. So those kids come in and work in that classroom with the other inclusion students. So absolutely saw that too. But there are, I realize, and I know you're going to speak on the kids in the classroom. We realize the kids in the classroom too. So that was the discussion that was had, and I'm not willing to do that to that class because it doesn't make sense for what's best for those kids.
Right. And so the waiver is in place for that situation,
mm-hmm.
Right? Okay, I just want to make sure, like, that is an option.
Yep. So
that we could make that decision, and then we would not need to go for the waiver
for those two
for that mm-hmm. class, for those classes, mm-hmm. right, for that grade level.
But maybe you could also hire another teacher and put it in the room there too. That's an option as well. Or put paras in the other rooms as an option as well.
Well, I would think if you were going to put paras in the room, you would put one para in the room and move more students
or space to that one.
You wouldn't hire a para for a class in 23.
You've got three students that are over literally for that grade level in that building.
Sure.
So visually, no, you don't put a para in each one of those three. You either add a para to another one, and then you move students, three or four students, to that classroom that has.
And then every time there's a new student in that grade level, we put them in that class.
So these three at the bottom, 2, 4, 6, is that three classrooms? One with two on the same first grade, one classroom with two kids, one classroom with four kids, one classroom with six kids. Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah.
So, but they're all individual classrooms. That's three classrooms.
No, this is a multi-grade
So if you see, there's that one,
okay, but
and
it's,
that one.
Okay.
They're the same.
Even though it says different pair, it's got plus two, so.
That's the name of the teacher.
It just didn't carry. Okay.
It carries down.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So what about this CLP? Is that carry too on all these
no.
ones?
They, yes. Uh-huh. This one, not.
No, that's different. So that's core. Classes. That's core.
No.
And then there's CLP.
One and this one are the same class.
Okay. What about
and
this one and this one?
They are the same class. No, they're not the same class. They're two different classes. But they have their own class. And then this one has their own classroom.
Okay.
And those are all classrooms that are staffed at the level of intense or complexity of the students. And they earn those units through their intense and complex units as special education students.
Do we have any open teacher positions that we've not been able to fill?
No.
So we filled all teacher positions that are open. Not
No, no.
For elementary.
We only have residentials and but we also have balanced that with what situation that presents itself each year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're a community that's going to grow, and so I know the intentions are not to exceed some absurd number, let's say 26 or 7. But when I'm putting on the spot, there has to be some cutoff where you feel comfortable. Hey, 24, that's where I feel comfortable. Anything above that is too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you wrestle with any numbers where you feel, like even though open-ended waiver, if open-ended waiver passes, this is where we feel comfortable holding that classroom and not going further.
I don't feel comfortable. I think 24 is definitely a number that I would look at. I really use my principals as a guide. If they say, Deb, we have a need, then we go to try to fill the need. So, I mean, if you want me to put a number on it, I can, but it's not for sure. If my principals say I have a need, then we try to fulfill the need.
Does it have to be an open-ended waiver? Because it sounds like Middletown voted on two specific classes the way they did theirs. And I'm just, or at the point of it, I guess. So my question is, does it have to be an open-ended waiver? I mean, could we vote on these class by class, right? Because like, if we're saying emerging, that's what it is. So it's not, so then what happens if a different class goes over? Do we have another vote?
It's just at this time, it's a snapshot.
It's a snapshot.
So we never vote on this again?
No.
So we could have 20 by the end of the year.
Well, what I'm saying is we monitor that to see if that's where we go by the end of the year.
What did we end up with last year? We
did
12 here. DOE's website said 13. But so what did we end up with at the end of the year that would have needed a waiver?
I don't know.
So if we pass the waiver this year, where do these, I mean, are we just going to transfer the same problem to the next grade level next year? Or like, what's the long-term plan? Because do we have empty classrooms? I mean, like, because technically we could redraw, because we're going to have to redraw once you open the new school anyway. But if you look at first grade,
that's a lot of money and effort.
I'm just asking.
Kids.
It might not be.
Well, even if we draw the line, that doesn't mean that this is going to help the students or volunteers.
Correct, but I'm asking long term. Like, is this problem just moved?
No,
so does first grade move to second
significant
grade?
Significant progress over the last couple of years because we took parent choice away. So taking parent choice away and spending a considerable amount of time of looking at the numbers before a meeting and after a meeting and having conversations with principals and making sure that we continue to evaluate it throughout the year is steps that we have taken it to drive it down to 7.2% of our class.
Right, but I'm looking at like, so first grade Smyrna Elementary, because we were talking about that one, evidently had four, we're down to three. So like, but those kids are more than likely gonna go to second grade Smyrna Elementary.
Yeah, but then we look and see how
did we grow more kids?
Right. So we add a unit and a teacher in the beginning. Like we'll look and see who rolled up, who's moved, who's moved in.
But if there's not a classroom to put the teacher in, what do we do? I mean, Smyrna Elementary.
You can make a TAM.
So it doesn't really solve the problem. We just shove more kids in the classroom. Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't help.
Okay.
Here is what I think Charlie was asking more along the lines of, correct me if I'm wrong, you were asking more along the lines, can we put a number on the waiver as far as you can't go over this? Is that what you were saying?
I was hinting that some people may find it more comfortable if you say, look, 24 students is what this waiver is going to go to, and we don't have to do any action between 22 and 24. You know, if a 23 or 24 students, there's no need to do any waiver. That's our allowance.
If that's what you all want, then that's
I'll just
what
we are. Out there saying that open-endedness lends itself to unintended abuse down the road and circumstances demanded. And some people feel more comfortable if there was a number saying, okay, look, 22 is a nice number and we should have 22. But everyone understands sometimes a little bit more. 24 is a reasonable exception to allow a classroom to be functional at 24 students in the classroom. 27 is not. So that's just my thought. If we get rid of the open-endedness, it may provide some comfort to somebody. To me, it would. And
so I guess from my perspective, I think everybody agrees that the lower number of students you have in a classroom, the more focus and attention they're going to get from the teacher and the better educated they're going to be. And that's everyone's end goal, is to make sure that all of our children are as educated as we can possibly make them when they move on to the next grade and then, you know, out of the school district. So, I mean, I think as a district, it really should be our number one goal, especially in those younger grades, to make those class sizes as small as possible so that there is the ability for those teachers to give them more attention. I know, I mean, I see my wife at, you know, 11 o'clock at night writing an IEP and things like that, because, you know, we're asking teachers to not only teach the kids as they were when we were in school, but yet now write IEPs, have follow-ups on those, because it's not like it used to be. We're asking them to do a lot more. And that is something that I think has contributed to the burnout of teachers from across the country, that we've seen where we have a teacher shortage because of those burnouts. So anything we can do to help them out, I think is crucial for us all to do. A couple of concerns that I have with it is I know that there are some schools that have open classrooms. We've also hired positions other than teachers and paras within the school district and still need this waiver. I've also seen across the state a lot larger districts than us not need the waiver, quite a few of them actually. And if they've been able to do it, I struggle with why we can't do it as well. Although I will say it's a testament to everyone in the district and the work that they've done to get it down from 12 or 13 to 6 this year. I know we're definitely headed in the right direction. But I think our number one goal, safety and education are two things, right? And I always look at, I try to prioritize everything, and the people that are closest to the kids are the ones we have to try to give them as much support as possible. And that's our teachers and our parents within the district. So, you know, our budgets are tight. So if we add somewhere, we have to sacrifice somewhere else. I mean, that's just how it works. We don't have a lot of money. Chris doesn't have a lot of money to work with, but I mean, it looks like a big budget, but at the end of the day, if we decide to go with the waiver, we have to sacrifice somewhere else. But I've done a lot of thinking about this, and I think that's a place we don't need to sacrifice are the people that are closest to the kids. So I would actually go as far as to say, like, put a hiring freeze on every position other than teachers or paras until we don't need a waiver, because they are that.
So important. You want to lose everybody else?
I said,
because everyone else
I said a hiring freeze.
Is doing
I
a lot.
Fire them.
No, I know, but there are a lot of other people that need support too. And agreed, like, I don't want the teachers to be overwhelmed and parents to be overwhelmed, but we also have schools that have to do state required evaluations and work with challenging students when they're in the classrooms, and those people are just as needed.
No, there are, but I think I deal in the private sector. We do hiring freezes all the time. And it makes it tougher on different areas, that's for sure. Like I said, we're going to have to cut other areas in order to make this work. But if in my mind, prioritizing the people closest to the kids are our number one priority.
Okay, and so in your opinion, then, if that decision goes forth, it's not just one school and one grade level. Because you either pass the waiver or you don't.
Right.
It's not, you cannot separate it. So fiscally, we would have to fund, it looks like, four para positions. Am I right? Like if I go first grade at Smyrna Elementary, third grade at Smyrna Elementary, so that's two. Then you've got North Smyrna Elementary with
one.
And then you've got CIS at one. So you're talking about four pairs.
Mm-hmm. No, because you would move kids into the one classroom.
You would have one classroom that gets a para and then.
And all the extra kids.
Or you could get six if you turn back in the two new associate principals positions we just got this year and get back three teacher positions, which would give you six paras.
How would you feel about that, Amber?
So when you talk about putting people in positions to help kids, I would say we are one of the buildings that did earn an associate principal. The work that is done that our admin team does on a daily basis to support teachers, whether it's helping them with their planning, their curriculum, or also helping them with students that need extra hands and extra adults, because being in the classroom, sometimes there are things that they struggle with. I would hate for them not to get that support too, because the teachers and the kids need that as well.
So this is not taking away a position you already have.
And so is there other, who was the other one that earned?
Well, you could.
You can turn anything in you want, right? We got to get back $1.3 million.
So you have.
I'm saying it's not going to help the class that we rent that building.
You can cash it in.
Class sizes are smaller. I'm sorry to interrupt, but if class sizes are smaller,
you can't take anything.
Then if we were smaller, then we would have public comments later.
We will do public comment later. We ask specific questions of the audience for specific reasons. Okay, so my comment was, yes, the AP at JVM is still not going to help the other positions and the other elementary teacher.
I don't understand why not.
So an assistant principal's position is earned by the building and can only be placed in the building.
Even if
so
you,
the only
even if you
thing,
give it back for the budget reduction?
That's what I'm going to say. If you give it back for the budget reduction, then that money can be spent elsewhere. But that is 100% then on the school district to pay the entirety with the reduced amount that you get for the cash in, as well as the local portion, as well as the additional employment costs.
So, Chris, we are giving back 10 teachers roughly. And for that give back, we're giving back one associate principal. If we give back the three associate principals and don't give back those three units, we would still be able to use it with state funding. Is that correct? It wouldn't come out 100% local funding, because we're just taking, instead of giving back the 10 teachers,
we're giving back assistant principals. We get part of our budget reduction covered. We do not get the ability to use those state dollars towards a different resource. So
that would be one part of the equation. If we elected to include something less than 10, we're still working on that number right now, in teacher units, we do get credit from the state at a lower amount. So the offset would not be one-to-one in the budget reduction, but it's also not one-to-one on the local side.
Right, but it would be pretty darn close. It's two associate principals to three teachers. Right.
The net feedback amount, yes. Not the operations amount on the state side, or the local side.
Because if we don't give back, we still have to come up with the difference of meeting the requirement of the $1.2 million.
Yeah, but that's what I'm trying to say is, okay, so we can run through this if you want to. So associate principal, what's our give back on the associate principal position?
About 74 for teacher. 104 for
a principal or associate principal, 77 for the teacher. There's two is 208. The three is, you know, 200 and whatever, 20 some. I don't know. Tell me. So anyway, so pretty darn close to the same give back that we would get. And then we would be able to utilize those three teacher units.
Is that what you're talking about? Two COCs for staff members opposed to one. The state would cover part of it, but it would still be a local share. And again, we would then still need to find that $210,000 in state funding on the operations side of our budget, which is very small.
I'm sorry.
If we completely flip and move the teacher units down to seven, and the AP up, if we decide to keep any of those APs, we would have to cover those completely locally.
Yeah, but I'm saying if we gave back all three instead of giving back two out of three.
All three.
We're giving back one right now. Yeah, one at the high school. We're not utilizing that one.
Right.
We are, but we were thinking about using, the plan was,
and
utilize
so
JVM to
north.
Turn in all three.
And JVM.
Yeah. And then that would give you the pairs that you need to make these classes.
That's what we didn't have to say. I think it's an independent discussion. I mean, it's related to factor in, but I think that the waiver issue is something.
I guess my point by that is there are ways.
Yeah, there are. Yeah.
So there are also ways to move students and do it as well. And these are mandates, you know, making your fourth grade classes in those two buildings larger. And so, for example, second grade at Clayton Elementary, and one student over, and you could move that student to two other classes and still use it as well.
But again, our goal here is to make the ratio of the student to teacher as low as we possibly and fiscally responsibly can.
Oh, absolutely.
To make sure that they're being taught. I know there's ways that we can move things around and make it work the way it is, but our goal is to do the best we can to make sure
so
we have the lowest.
We've added, we believe that. And that's why, you know, our opportunity funding went to staff this year, which are supporting our students directly in multiple settings, but aren't in this count in any way. So there are other staff and situations that are supporting our students, but aren't listed because they aren't in that classroom a half day, a full day. You know, the specialists when the students are pulled out of the classroom. There's a lot of ways we work with, and that's where the principals and associate principals work the schedule so that this part of the day there's a smaller group. This is when, you know, groupings can happen, and there's staff that choose there that isn't accounted for either.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand those. I mean, those unit counts are taking those into account. I guess I didn't describe it as well. My hire and freeze recommendation wasn't necessarily things that are in the school as much as the district office.
So you're going to talk about paras and it's what, hiring four paras for this building or three paras for this building? For Smyrna Elementary, is it three classrooms? Four classrooms. I mean, four.
I got three, and then three and first grade, and one and fourth. Four. Or one and third, sorry.
Yeah, so it's four third.
I mean, that's up to you. There would be a pair in every single classroom in every building.
You would need two pairs for Sunny or Smyrna Elementary. And then nothing for Sunnyside. You need one for North and you need one for CES. So.
Or we could move a student to CES.
Well, or could you move a pair? And I'm just asking. And like on here, somewhere, where did I see it? Hold on, I'll go to the last one. So like every kindergarten classroom at Clayton.
And those are all earned by special education students though, which have to
school?
Be attached.
Okay.
Yeah.
Clayton, the only one that's second grade.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm talking about the parents. Like every kindergarten class has a pair.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, like could we move students. One of the no. four pairs? Okay, that's what I'm asking.
I'm sure parents.
Well, then we need a waiver for all. For
yeah.
Okay.
I'm sure that there are parents that would move their kids, but I'm not as big of a fan of moving a kid at this time of the year just because of the relationships they've established in the classroom with the teacher and as well as the other kids.
Maybe you're the student at CES, you don't need one there. Immersion is.
And what's the only immersion one? It says the PTP, part-time para.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how's that work? Because that para moves between a whole bunch of classrooms means that we don't need a waiver for any of the classrooms they push into throughout the day. Is that how that works?
Amber.
I didn't hear that question.
The part-time para.
They got you have a part-time para listed here. And on like, so on room 111, that would require a waiver, but it says one part-time para. And then in first grade, you got room 209, which is over, but it says one part-time para. So if you push a para in for a portion of the day and that class is no longer waiver, doesn't need a waiver?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so those classrooms do have a para that splits her time between different classrooms. So she is Spanish speaking and she goes into those classrooms and is additional support.
Yeah.
So how long does a para have to be in a classroom every day for it to be excluded from the waiver?
Well,
I mean, like, is there, like, how does that work? I didn't realize that having a part-time para was an option.
They're in the school for 29 hours a week. So it's just, I mean, she's there all day. That's what she does. She just goes from one class to the other.
Oh, I'm not judging the para. I'm asking, so like, because she moves, mm-hmm. she eliminates two classrooms, right?
No, is that she only eliminates the one. We just gave her the one.
Okay, but both the classes that it says part-time para.
And I only asked for one.
But she's not in either of them. See, she's down here in this one. 24, 23.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not highlighted. That's the only one highlighted.
Mm-hmm.
See what I mean? Those ones are over, but they're not highlighted.
She has a para. She has a part-time para.
Yes, that's what I'm asking. So the part-time para, I'm assuming, is a full-time para that floats between these two classes. I'm sorry, I'm making that assumption. Is that correct?
So
it would be a quarter support. So one kid over would only necessitate.
So that's what I'm asking.
Support.
Does she take that class to 33 or does she take that class to 25.34 or something?
Yeah,
okay. Exactly. Okay. That's kind of, yes.
That's how I would enter it on the sheet. Mm-hmm.
She takes it a quarter of the 11.
She
goes to four classes. Yep. She get a quarter of the 11. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Any more open discussion? Okay.
Oh, yeah, one more. Sorry. On first grade at Sunnyside, the first classroom listed has a longevity sub.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I understand what the difference when a longevity sub and a para is, but, like, does that mean we can just steal that person to be a longevity sub if, you know, one of the teachers is pregnant, will we take, you know, goes on maternity leave, will we pull, so that position.
Yeah, that's with a particular student.
Stays permanent?
Just, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. All right, we still have time to,
yep.
So write down your thoughts and comments. So we're gonna move on to item number 4, changes to the agenda.
No.
formal public comment. I have the order in which you guys signed up and go. I do want to read our rules of public comment. As a reminder, public comment session is for uses of a general concern. If you have concerns about the district's personnel, facilities, or services, you are welcome to share those concerns with the board in writing in accordance with the following board policies, which are listed on the district website. Policy 1313, complaints about school personnel. Policy 1314, complaints about school facilities and services. Policy 1315, public complaints. During the course of formal public comment, the Board of Education, at our discretion, may enter into executive session to hear matters of sensitive or private nature. Please remember that public comment is not a question and answer session. Each group shall choose one representative to speak, and comments must be limited to no more than 5 minutes. All other individuals are limited to 3 minutes. Speakers cannot cede their time to others. Speakers will be recognized by the board president in the order you signed up. If we have a large number of people signed up to speak, the board president may, at her discretion, limit the number of persons allowed to speak based upon order of sign up. Our public comment session will not exceed 1 hour. Formal public comment was signed up under the public comment portal, and to participate, they must have signed up prior, complete the form prior to 12 noon on the day prior to the meeting and appear in person at the meeting. Once the name of the speaker is called for public comment, the speaker will stand and give comment. Okay, so now, let's make you
get a little passionate here.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Okay, so I did bring some papers. Is this the beginning of my 3 minutes, or can I wait till I pass this out? All right.
We will have a, it's actually, you have 5 minutes.
Oh, what is it? Three?
Yeah, just the individual.
Oh, you're speaking.
She's speaking on behalf of my turn. She's seven, five.
I have this one just for me. Stand here, or would you like?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Let me know when I'm on. Okay. Thank you so much for inviting us to be here and listening. Thank you, Dr. Brown. Thank you so much for coming into our school today and touring. It was a pleasure to see you. Thank you, Mr. Skews, also for popping through. And I don't know if anybody else was able to make it, but we do appreciate you for taking the time if you were able to come out, because it's just really important to us. So what you're looking at here is, I just have lingering questions. As a tenured teacher, I'm a veteran teacher, I'm in my 14th year, and I just feel like, man, we are always passing these waivers. And I do remember, we talk about, well, we could break up the TAM, but that's not the best for the kids. And we could slam the TAM, but that's also not best for the kids. So I really just wanna get away from asking those things or even saying those things, because our core values in Smyrna are compassion, integrity, and respect, some of our core values. And it is not compassionate to even say those to the teachers who are struggling every day, day in, day out with these post-pandemic babies. They are struggling so much, and we want to love them, and we are burned out. And truly the reason I'm here today, because I'm actively looking for other work. I'm fighting to stay. So I looked into it. And the graphs are there to help you if perhaps help. But on average, we're 16 to 20 classrooms over 22 in elementary. And so I was like, well, where does the money come from? Because I really don't know. But my husband's an accountant and always tell me to stop spending it. So I understand that. So I saw on what was posted, and these are links, and I can email them to you guys so you can have the links to see where I got my information, because it could be wrong, and please correct the math if it's wrong. But on all the years when we posted our end of year budget, the total ending balance, if you go all the way down to the bottom, right, is multiple million dollars. And so when I look at how much it would cost if we actually forecasted, thank you, Mrs. Judy, for talking about forecasting, because it just took me a couple of hours on a Sunday to go back and look at the top. Look at what did we do? Why don't we already know this? Why don't we already know this? if we just took the time, we would know that we never really need more than 9 teachers. And I'm not talking about giving one to a school and then we just slam a bunch of more kids in there. No, every single room, make them under 20, make them under 22. They need us. You guys need us. There's some mass exodus. If you care, talk about how can we find other ways to fund. Stop taking it from the teachers. The kids need it, and we need it too. And what it came down to me was...
Ellie, you guys need a copy. I forwarded my letter to you already. Would you like a hard copy too?
I received it.
All right. All right, am I go now?
Yeah, go.
Yep. All right. I'm not going to take the time to read my letter. You guys have already had the opportunity to read my letter. I did want to touch on some highlights. We've talked about class size. You know, we've talked about, actually, I've heard a lot of numbers, money, ratios. I want to talk about humans, which is what we're talking about here when we're talking about these numbers. We're talking about kids, we're talking about individuals. And a higher number of kids in a class means less individual instruction. It means kids are being impacted. They're learning less because I, as one human, am expected to teach to, in my class, 24 different learning styles, learning abilities. And it's darn near impossible. I go home and I feel like a failure. We've talked about, you know, less individual instruction. Test scores are going down. That's bad PR for our district. It's bad PR for our country. Talked about money. What about teachers' money? My budget has been $200. Stayed the same. My kids' sizes, my class size has gone up. So that's money coming out of my pocket, and I'm not getting state-funded dollars. I'm not getting additional allocations of funds. It's been $200 blanket. I've spent my money. And I took into consideration that I'd be over my 22 kids, and I was right. I'm at 24 now. There's no extras. So that money's going to come out of my wallet. And kids aren't about money, really. I love these children. I'm at 24 kids. I don't want to lose any of them. But I just want to share a story with you guys. My aunt is a teacher. She was actually an administrator. She went to China. In China, they have large class sizes. And she said, what do you do when you have a behavioral issue in your class? And the translator tried to translate. And it was like, we have no idea what you're talking about. What do you mean behavioral issues? And finally, when it was conveyed, like, this is behavior issue. And they're like, no, that would bring dishonor on their family. We don't have the same here. We don't have kids that are going home and getting support at home. We are the support. We're the frontline troops. We are what they are getting. My classroom, let's talk about the DNA of my classroom. I have 2 children that have parents that are in prison. I have another child that I got a call, you know, take care of Delaware. His dad beat his mom. He now tells me he doesn't have a dad anymore. I feel like a Capri Sun pouch. We're talking about kids. And my kids all come in every morning with their little straws and they stab their little straw in my Capri Sun pouch and they just suck me dry. And that's the cross that I'm willing to fall on as an educator. But even that doesn't seem to be enough.
Oh, good evening. This is Vernon Board of Education, Dr. Brown, Ms. Judy, administration. First, I would like to thank our administration for all your hard work on this matter, but this has been something that weighs heavily on my heart because it directly affects our kids, our teachers, and then to our parents and our community. Classroom size has been a hot topic, not only in the Smyrna School District, but around our nation. The smaller the class size, the better the learning environment. Global studies, not just national studies, global studies have proven overwhelmingly that this is the case for reasons such as more one-on-one time, students can't hide, it's easier to identify issues, there's more cohesive class culture, students are more engaged. So it's just better for teachers, it's better for students, and it's better for parents. For 8 years as a member of this Board of Education, I have spoken out against approving the class size waiver. I have done it for several reasons, the first of which is that it should be taken out of the state's hands. This should be under local control, and our administration and our board and our school district should, number one, be able to handle that on our own. So that's a legislative problem. Two, the first year that I was on the school board, in fact, the fourth month of my first year, I had a conversation with the first grade teachers at Smyrna Elementary. This is 9 years ago. And all of them came to the October board meeting, that's when we used to vote on it then, where they shared their frustration through a fountain of tears. And I knew from that point on, I would never vote for that waiver. And I found it wasn't just Smyrna Elementary, but all of our schools that the waiver affects. Every teacher that I had spoken to in my 8 years on the board did one. And the union has pled with us not to pass it every year. And we might say, well, it's only 24 students instead of 22, or the classroom that has the 20 over 22 gets a para. But the problem is, if there is a special needs student in that classroom, in many, if not all cases, the para has to work with the special needs student one-on-one. It doesn't solve the problem. So then the teacher's stuck in the classroom with the only 23 kids anyway. Lastly, our kids have already lost 2 years of quality and excellent education that the Smyrna School District used to be known for. If there is anything that we should be doing as a district, it is lowering class sizes and catching them up rather than pushing them through. The argument is that we don't have the physical space, but if we had portable trailers, I'm up to anything until the next school is built, we should do it. I know it's not beautiful. I know it's not the final answer. I know it creates a lot of work, and we would have to hire more teachers, which we already know is short supply. I know all this. I know it all, but we owe it to our kids. We owe it to our teachers. We owe it to our community. It's about time we tell the state no and tell our students, teachers, and community yes.
Ms. Jackson. Good evening. I stand before you as the president of Smyrna Educators Association, supporting my members in a K-3 setting that are requesting their classroom stay at the below the student cap. I also stand in front of you as a teacher who has experience of large class sizes and how the inequities that are created are amplified in those classrooms. Lastly, I stand in front of you as a parent who has heard and experienced the complaints of the distractions the larger class size can create. Addressing the inequities and achievement gaps and opportunity gaps that our students of color with disability and with language learners and from low-income households begin with small and normal class sizes. Some of the issues educators are experiencing are limited space inside the classroom, lack of funding of classroom supplies, disciplinary struggles, to name a few. I'll share with you the perspective of one of our K-3 educators in a letter they wrote. To whom it may concern, I'm writing this letter to you regarding the class size waiver meeting to be held Wednesday, November 9th, 2022. Class size should not be liable beyond what the Delaware Code states, which is no more than 22 students per class in grade K-3. Let's talk about supplies and space for a minute. Cost to supply classrooms with the necessities for students continue to rise, and the money allotted to teachers is insulting to say the least. Usually, that meager $200 must be spent on a specific website. If that budget amount cannot be increased, teachers should be at least offered the opportunity to be more cost-effective by placing orders at Walmart or Amazon. More often than not, teachers are having to supplement their classrooms out of their own money. As for space, most classrooms are only equipped for a maximum of 24 students. We're talking about lockers, space for backpacks, chairs, floor space for students to sit on during more meetings. As we know all too well, students continue to be enrolled during or throughout the school year. By the time school ended in June this past year, every kindergarten class in Smyrna Elementary had 27 seats. Students' backpacks, their coats, their scarves, their hats, etc., had to be placed in milk crates, or laundry baskets because there wasn't enough lockers for everyone. Hands-on projects had to be scrapped because there wasn't enough
supplies for students to be guided through projects, which brings me to the next issue of large class sizes, behavior concerns. Larger classes lead to more disruptive environments. Class time becomes more managing behaviors than learning and academics. This is especially true for kindergarten and first grade, and they're not only learning to read and write, but they're also learning social skills. A smaller class size is instrumental in providing all the needs that a student may have. Lastly, the biggest issue of all that comes with larger class size is less one-on-one time. That attention for you to pay attention is necessary. Please listen to our teachers, our parents, and our parents. It is not the best interest of the students. It's not the best interest of our staff. Please consider voting no for this waiver. Thank you.
That's the only four names I have. All right, so on to new business. Do we have any other questions, comments?
So you want to be discussion before we have a motion?
I
What's the breakdown on one-on-one pairs versus entire class pairs? Because, I mean, there's no distinction. I've got so many papers now. Hold on. There's no distinction, really, in how this is given to us on whether they're a one-on-one pair or not. And while the state might not see a difference, I would like to know. I mean, does anybody have a clue?
So you can correct me if I'm wrong. This is the way one-on-one's been explained to me. And maybe this is just an apple. When I was a one-on-one, the ratio was actually 2-to-1. Is that correct? So when you can be a one-on-one, you can be responsible for 2 students.
But as a one-on-one,
if they're a complex student, if they're intensive students, and it's 3-to-1.
Your question has changed. But your question is,
to answer your question, if you look at the table where you see COM, that's complex students.
Yep.
Those are your students who weren't
here. So that's the ones that say complex are more than likely a one-on-one.
Correct.
Okay. So,
in the state unit, a complex unit is 1 to 2.6.
All right. So, what about on the other ones where it doesn't break it down? Like, what's the difference between complex and intense? I guess some of them have intense,
so
some of them don't give.
The ratio of the state is 1 to 6.
Okay.
But is this your question? As a school district, are we doing complex 1-to-1?
No.
No, we're not.
No.
Okay.
So I guess my question is, so like nobody's a 1-to-1 in if we're not doing complex at 1-to-1, we don't have 1-to-1.
Unless there's one kid in the entire grade that needs that support. I mean, but we attempt to do even at the middle school. 1-to-2s, 1-to-3s,
okay.
Just so we are utilizing those staff as best as we can, and also not trying to foster independence of those kids. We don't want that person just following the kid around.
Okay.
Kind of thing. I mean, every situation is different. I can't really speak to that.
Can I ask a question, Sue? So say we could vote no tonight,
mm-hmm.
and we post positions. What legally are we required to have done by December 1st? Do we have to have those positions filled, or do they just have to be posted? I mean, the kids are still going to be in the classrooms if we hire somebody, until we hire somebody.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know what it's like here, but I know Apple's got like 12 pair of positions open,
mm-hmm.
and some of them are due for months. So I just want to make sure everybody knows. I mean,
both I don't know what the deadline would be.
That
I'd have to look into it.
Compliance.
I'd have to look into what the deadline would be. Chris is probably looking it up right now.
So I talked to one of Capital's former board members And he was on the board when they denied the waiver in 2013. And I guess he says, if you deny the waiver, DOE will come in with assistance to help formulate a plan. At least at that time, standing up, it's 9 years ago. But the only reference point that I had of knowing somebody, he said, DOE comes in and they'll offer us assistance on how to formulate a plan, what to do. You're shaking your head like that doesn't happen anymore. Okay. Like I said, it's the only person I knew.
They guide you through financial decisions, but they're not saying this is what you should. There's no program.
Okay. Well, I mean, like in the code, it even says that, you know, DOE will provide assistance if the waiver doesn't pass.
What defined
as
assistance?
Oh, I don't know. That's what I'm asking. If anybody had,
they're not going to give us more money. They're not going to help
I'm just asking.
I guess you need to define assistance.
My guess is it's more technical assistance would be my assumption. That's what it sounded like they offered Dover. Here's some not financial resources, but here's some things we can do to help you through this process. So I'm just asking if anybody has any more relevant experience than that person did in 2013.
No.
No. Okay.
From what I read of it, there is no deadline.
I didn't read that. I didn't read it that way either.
Yeah. I didn't
see
it. Saying
this is a
requirement. There is a deadline there is a deadline that you have to submit to
the waiver by December 1st. But as far as if you vote no and you post the position.
Yeah, if the position is posted,
there is no, you have to have it filled by this date. There is no.
Right. You have to have it reported by December 1st, but you have to either have your class sizes under as you report or the waiver submitted.
That's not the way.
And the submitted.
That's not the way I
understand. Because we could.
You do too. There's a class size collection and then there's the board waiver. There's two steps. We say we're the class size selection and we're all under and we don't even need the board waiver, or that the class size waiver is over for at least one. And then did your board vote to approve yes or no?
That is true.
The waiver.
Because it is an app that I have to fill out.
It's
it pulls
two,
it from eSchool and I have to fill it in.
You have to submit the class size waiver, and then you have to be with the under 22 for all of those classes, and you have to have it submitted by December 1.
Yep. But if your board doesn't pass it, like John said, they put in there what the steps later, if your board doesn't pass it, on how.
There are no steps.
The Department of Education shall provide technical assistance to any school district seeking assistance. Allocating its Division One, Division Three comprehensive
additional program. So we're saying this is what's allowed for you to move units and so forth. But it's
so we
not
know how to do that.
Yeah.
It's just the financial.
I'm just reading it as I go here.
That's all. That's
I'm just saying, be careful with that the department will provide assistance. Is it assistance with funding?
Yeah.
Is it?
Oh, didn't no. They didn't say they gave them money.
Right. Yeah. Just saying.
Yeah. Sorry. I guess I should have clarified on that. Some they gave him some Yoda information,
what
but no money.
Good point.
1707. I know it's not public comment, but it does say that they'll give equalization funding, and I had a question about that on my paper.
Yeah.
We already received equalization funding. They don't give you any more. It's part of our overall budget.
It was talking about like local funding, and they would match that if you decided not to pass the waiver, but I don't understand that. So I just, you know, well, maybe that's something we can look into.
Does the language of the waiver allow for specifying 20 years being one over as being our limit for the waiver?
No.
You said waivers.
We can specify. The way I read it, you can specify it however you'd like.
Mm-hmm. They're not going to give us any more money, Marlena. I'd love to think they were, but they're not.
So.
You go ahead. Go ahead. Yeah, if you vote to accept a waiver, that doesn't mean you don't give the administration direction. And I'll pull the data every month if we need to discuss it. Just a thought.
But the thing is, as we speak, there's classrooms and 20 students in it. So we do nothing, it's status quo, things stay the same.
Mm-hmm.
So But you know, but it's still not a waiver necessary because we're over 22.
Yes.
So what I'm saying is one way to solve that for the time being is to say, we approve a waiver of 23 only. And that way things stay the way they are, and I'm growing, and we have met our requirement to waiver, to buy a waiver at over 22.
So what happens on the Friday before Thanksgiving when, before Thanksgiving break, when we have a classroom that we don't have a choice but to put 24 kids in if
they approve that? That's the whole situation because our waiver all allows us to have 23.
But right, but I'm just saying, so, like when that kid shows up to school, what do we do then? I'm not disagreeing with your thought process.
But that is the concern.
I'm asking the question.
And so I will say that these are snapshots as of October 31st.
That is the last school day.
Yeah.
So I think Ellie has 24. Mm-hmm. But
well, and so does Tara McNatt, who's also in the first grade team, and Jackie Bartolas has 23. So I don't think that data is necessarily.
It's a snapshot as of October 30th, 31st.
So to answer your question, It's like that doesn't matter because we're only looking at a snapshot.
It doesn't. If we say you can't have more than 24, it matters.
Right, but as far as the waiver for this, yeah.
So I'm just asking, what's the follow up?
You're saying we've already done that.
I'm wondering what the penalty. Chris had a good point. What is the penalty?
For just telling the state no?
Yeah, for telling the state no and saying we're in the process of hiring more teachers and paras.
I don't think there's a penalty. But we do report, the department does report what's submitted.
So,
for the class size waiver and the auditor, we could be audited. We have to make sure that we are in compliance. And then it has that it's supposed to be posted as of December 31st.
I just want to try to get, you know, the ratio as low as we possibly can. And if there's a way we can do it, we should do it.
So hold on. So I have a follow up thing. So this is supposed to be a snapshot as of 10/31, right? Mm-hmm. Then how can we remove this Mrs. McKee's class? But we're not accepting the fact that Mrs. Hall's class was bigger.
Because I didn't know. I talked to Cindy and she said that this one had moved. So I was like, okay, I'll just put that there. But so it doesn't require a waiver.
Even though it did on the 31st of October.
Yeah. No, it should.
It should require a waiver.
No, I don't know. I have to look in the data to see what it says in the.
I just don't understand how we could change down if we can't change up.
No, we can. I just didn't know that these guys were up. I would have put that.
Okay. So this is just for our information.
Yeah, just your information. Okay. Yep.
Okay.
Right now we're not compliant with state requirements, so I think doing nothing is an option.
Right.
And have an open file waiver.
Yes, this isn't submitted. It's
unpleasant option. So I just think that you just said, yeah, I'm saying that maybe 24 may come, but you say 23, that's what maybe it looks like all right now. Or 24, I don't know. But when my whole thing with waiver, you have to respect it, like John said, you have to respect that, right? Chris said, people in trenches, which are teachers. The teachers are sitting there saying, hey, we're in a pickle right now. You can't have a waiver. 22 is enough. You have a problem with them. It's hard to be conscious to say that, okay, well, hey, 24, 25, whatever. But we can't do nothing. So I think you put a number on it. At least we're, and then we may have to be changed and revisit next year. I don't know. But you put a number on it, we're satisfying the requirement to do something. But yet, respect these students and teachers, feeling them not going too far.
Honestly, the board's is whether we say yes or no, and we pass it, and then it's the administration to figure out how to get them all on 22 and make them present options next week. Mm-hmm. You guys vote on it. So, I mean, it really, we don't have to solve which direction tonight. It's a yes or no, and then they have to come up with, I mean, the schools, the administration. You lose your AP that we've already done interviews and offered positions to. That's ramifications we have to consider as well. So
Tonight we do not have to make a decision on what path forward is. Something you guys can decide next week.
I do want to clarify that positions have not been offered.
Oh, okay.
We started the process.
You just interviewed them. Okay.
And they have Mrs.
Studio. The second round. Okay. All right. So that's, yeah, you're already tomorrow.
Just to be clear, no one currently in AP, someone that go, we're saying
right.
The new ones that were
the right. Right.
They've already,
right.
They've already started interviews for those two positions.
Right.
To present somebody for the right level.
So we've talked a lot about if this fails. If this passes, what can we do to assist the teachers that are over kids?
We can still pass and still hire a parent.
It, yeah, I mean, it doesn't mean that you don't still try to help them. And it doesn't mean that we don't have to hire the assistant principals, because as much as I want to support the teachers, I want to support my administration team.
Oh, I don't think that was a. I didn't get the impression Christopher recommended that as like the only path forward. I just think he was saying there's a multitude of options.
We have a lot of new teachers that need support at JVM, and we have challenging students at North that require the assistance of more than just the administration that has very complicated needs in that school. So, yes, the teachers are struggling. So are the administrators.
I have a 6:30 junior honor society meeting. And so I just got somebody to take her to. So is there any other comments, questions?
I want to ask you what
then we adjourn.
Then it has to be on the agenda and it has to be voted on before December 1st so that it can be in compliance.
So we have to vote on this no matter what. No action is not seen as compliance. It's just a question.
You have to go before, if you're not in compliance with a class size waiver, you have to have a board vote. And then the board can vote yes or no.
Mm-hmm. But a non-motion would be the same as a no vote, right?
Right. We were not in compliance on October 31st. So we have to.
We have to, actually, if we choose to not have this, we actually have to have a motion and defeat. Is that what you're saying?
Second. All right, I have a motion on the table by Dr. Wilson, and I have a second by Ms. Mount. I'll call for the vote now. Dr. Wilson?
No.
Ms. Mallett? Mr. Snow?
No.
Mr. Spuse?
No.
I vote aye. Motion carries 4-1.
No, motion fails.
Sorry, motion fails. 4-1. Okay. Motion is adjourned. Meeting is adjourned. I gotta go.